Good evening, my friends. So good to see your faces. So glad you're here. I reflected on, what if I had been at a party with all these people? And you think, what we would say to each other, what would we do? It would be different. We'd still converse. We'd still connect to each other. But somehow the knowing would be there. And so it's nice. It's nice to know that there are others that are wanting to connect to connectedness. And that's what the lesson is about tonight. Who we really are. And, it's the question this practice keeps prodding us to keep asking ourselves. So it must be very, very important. And so we learn from the teachings who we really are is beyond the mind and the body. Who we really are can't be imagined are cognitively understood. So that's kind of a dilemma, if there's any truth to that. So that's what we're trying to find out. Is there other ways to perceive one's life? And last week we talked about a variety of perceptions. And we are perceiving constantly. Seeing, hearing, thinking, tasting, smelling. But we begin to see that our perceptions comes with a lot of baggage. Because non-normal awakened perceptions are distorted because of this phenomena. That's why Randy and I disagree. Well, we disagree because our perceptions sometimes, no, it's this way. No, this is what I saw. No, and it answers a lot of questions in that way. Because we're two people are not going to perceive if they're looking at the same thing the same way. So we have these conditioned perceptions relative to, it's connected to what we have perceived in the past. Whether we want it to or not, it's just kind of the way of things. If we're not conscious, or if we don't know there's any other way. So we bring the past into the present moment. And that can be known, and that can be seen. So we perceive through the mind and the body. And who we are, and this is important, why it's so important about this beautiful question is, who we are cannot be perceived through the mind. Then that right there, if we believe it, is it's just a little acknowledgement that, well, let's ask these questions. So if you ask the mind that question, it goes to what we talked about last week, is we start identifying with what we do see with the rational mind, which is nothing's wrong with it. And by how do we identify ourselves? Well, by what we see and hear and smell and taste and think. So we can get caught up and we are, I am, we get caught up in these bodies, you know. We know how we get stuck in our bodies, our profession, whatever it is. We think, oh, I am the scientist. Oh, I am the principal. Oh, I am the mother. Oh, I am the father. Our egos, we identify also, of course, with our egos. And that's one of the things that we begin to perceive in another way. So our feelings, our emotions, everything that we are here to witness, we begin to realize they're all phenomena. Because we point ourselves in that direction. Begin to ask the question, well, who am I really? Or what is this all about? And the things that, the six things, are, that's natural. It's a phenomena that comes with being a human. And we begin to see experientially how they arise and they fall away. They're constantly changing. And they're not going to be with us when we die. They're going to die with our bodies and our minds. So if we identify with any of this phenomena, and we have to a little bit, I'm not saying absolutely, we feel separate. We feel different from one another. Oh, I'm a meditation teacher. So that must be, mean that, you know, I know more than you. Well, it just isn't so. It just isn't so. Because everything that the Buddha teaches, says, is within all of us. So who is our teacher? Well, the teachers are people we connect with. Our teachers are people and processes in our life that are telling us something. If we are open and open to the possibility that that could maybe happen, that I might can receive the teaching for any given moment. But when we feel separate, I don't know about you, but I judge, I discriminate. I do all those human things that I don't want to do. Because it doesn't feel right. When we get in touch with our minds and bodies and start relying on experiencing life through the body, it just... you don't want to go there. Adyashanti, Randy quoted him tonight, and he says, freedom is the realization that everything and everybody gets to be exactly as they are. Isn't that sweet? But we know that a little bit, and that's okay. And like Ram Dass says, we sleep, and then we wake up. We sleep, and then we wake up. Especially when we're on this spiritual quest. So, and Adyashanti says, unless we've come to the point, unless we've seen that this is how reality sees things, the mind, then we're actually withholding, now this gets bigger, from the world. Huh? Yeah. We're seeing it as a possession, and we're only concerned with ourselves. And we slip into that, and we slip out of it, thank goodness. And that is being a human being. Nothing's wrong with that. So when we meditate, our perceptions begin to shift on relying more on what we actually experience in any given moment. And so it seems that studying directly the mind and the body on this path leads us to a world or a life of connection. And it starts early. Instead of being preoccupied with just the physical, we begin to touch what is beyond the physical. As we get quiet and still, go within and open to possibilities. And I'm talking to myself, as you well know. And then life becomes, lo and behold, with a little bit more ease. Not all the time, because we live in two worlds. We know that. We've got a foot in the spiritual world that we've touched. And then we've got to live with being a human being. So, we're aware of all the individual differences, but that is just the way we're packaged. It doesn't mean that we are not connected or that we can't depend upon one another. And we begin to see that which is the same in others is the same in me. See how this practice is so needed in this world. That's where changes in how we treat each other will start. I'd say one meditator at a time. Because it seems like we are interested in this. So, Buddhism teaches that people are made to live a ceaseless connectedness, which is interactive or multidirectional. And we begin at times to move away from ego-centeredness. Because if that's all we know, the mind and the body, the mind creates the ego. And that's natural. But then in studying the ego, we begin to see it can be managed, just like your mind. It can be managed. And we can see it when we get caught in our ego, which is a teaching. And then we can experience when we're not in our ego. I was telling a friend the other day, when I teach a Dharma lesson, sometimes it comes up, and I don't know which part necessarily, it comes from the heart. It comes from spaciousness. And sometimes, lo and behold, it comes from the ego. And sometimes you may be able to distinguish it, and I can too a little bit. But it's just so common for us. So one of the basic tenets of Buddhism is the concept of interdependence, which says that all things exist only in relationship to others. Everything that we do and say and think and smell and touch has effect on everything. So what do we do about these things that are coming up that we're having to live with? can tell you the things, and, you know, these things that are coming up that we're living with are from a mind that's not managed. A mind that has completely taken over. And nothing can have an independent, autonomous existence. The world is a vast flow of events that are linked together and participate in one another. So when we're meditating and our hearts open, and we are with that openness, we are conscious of that openness, it affects everything. And this is a catcher, simultaneously, constantly, faster than fast. That's how it's moving. So oneness or connection is our natural state. That's why once we become interested in wanting to know the truth, it becomes more compelling, as you well know. Tell me more, tell me more. Because all our problems stem from seeing ourselves as separate. And that confusion starts when we assume that our minds are to be listened to. Now, that doesn't mean we're making the mind the villain, no. It's just the mind needs to be known and managed. That's it. It's bona fide in its own way, has a life of its own. So Buddha said that we should view consciousness as transpersonal, something we all share. Consciousness comes first at the time of our birth. You know, just hold a little baby or look at a little baby or kids. They're there. They're awake. But it's only later that we divide the world into you and me. So there's no fixed truth ever of who we are as a person. Just notice, oh, I'm feeling this way right now. Oh, dear, I'm feeling this way in the next minute. Oh, and two more minutes, I'm feeling another way. Why? Because the law of nature is you can't stabilize what can't be stabilized. We can't do it. And when we try to, it's going against the stream. It's going against the laws of nature. That's why it hurts so much. And that's why the peace of releasing it, the peace of allowing the heart to connect to all of us, is such ease. It's such ease. And so we ask, and we keep asking, who am I? So our body and mind does not perish with time. Instead, it's the body and mind that perish with time. It's not our body, it's the body. Do we own them? If we did, you know, I'd make a lot different choices. And Buddhism says there is no core which is unchanging, nor any entity with absolute control over anything we call me or mine. See why the ego is so afraid? Because the ego is strong and it wants to be in control. And we begin to see, oh, that's the ego. And that's okay. You don't blame yourself. You just say, well, that's the human part of me egoing out. And it happens to all of us, and it will continue. But when we meditate, we begin to see it, not in a judgmental way, but as a way of knowing that supports our effort into waking up. And then, but Buddha says, notice the opposite. When we are open and loving and not judgmental, we know how that feels. So the practice is somewhat geared towards eliminating the notion of a permanent controlling self-identity, as this gives us a yardstick to measure ourselves against others. I've told you this before, if you remember, Anand Tupin said, a Tibetan teacher that we listen to says, Tibetans don't compete. What if we didn't compete with one another? You know, that just blew my mind. I don't know if it's true or not. But it's just the idea that he has that perception. And so we're set up in this world, we're set up in this country to compete with one another. And it makes us miserable, makes me miserable. So in conventional wisdom, it is who we attain, it is we who attains the truth. This mind and body, each, again, this is the paradox. It has to be done through our particular mind and body and conditioning. So are you saying your waking up is different than my waking up? Yes. That's why I don't grab a hold of any concept of what it is about waking up. Randy and I discovered that early in our practice. Because his practice is geared toward his own interconnectedness. That's maybe sounds like an oxymoron, but from his own conditioning. And I'm a white American woman, which is quite different than a white American man. Okay? Completely different. Or from another culture. So, we want to keep that in the forefront. We just want to know that we don't know as much as we think we do. And to maintain this openness, reminding ourselves that this will bring the freedom and the peace that we all want. And so, I hope I didn't sound preachy. Sometimes Randy says I sound preachy. If I did, I didn't mean to. Sometimes I'm passionate and intense. But I don't mean for it to come through. I just want us to all wake up. Wake up, by gosh. So thank you for being good listeners. And then Randy's going to come in and we're going to open it up to you. Thank you.